The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Steve Englander, Managing Director at Citigroup Global Markets and currency strategist extraordinaire. Steve, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Vonnie. It's a pleasure.
Saw something today that maybe was a little bit surprising. The euro actually breached $1.35 and then it came back above $1.35. What happened?
Well, the breach, I think, is because investors are a little bit concerned that the convergence trade has run its course, that spreads between peripheral currencies and core currencies and the rates that they pay have come down massively over the last 2 years and even over the last 6 months. And there's the sense that, you know, maybe there's relatively little value there. There's, you know, obviously people have been talking about the Portuguese banks, and there's a bit of concern that Greece down the road will have trouble closing its financing gap. So I think that there's a sense that, you know, what's the upside to the euro? It's a low interest rate currency where the sizzle in the convergence trade has left. You know, that said, today I think that what we've seen is that, there's been a little bit more convergence. There's a little bit more risk appetite in markets, not just in the euro, but elsewhere. So it didn't stay below 135 for a long time, but I'd say there's much more risk that it continues to go down than that it runs up again.
Well, I was just going to say, given your argument, would that not portend some more euro selling then?
We can easily see that. I mean, there's some forces that have been supporting the euro. We think that central banks have been buying, and obviously the convergence trade is there. But overall, I think that the euro positive trade has become very well priced into markets. So, I would say that there's still more downside.
How far could it possibly go in the short term?
You know, that depends. You know, the other side of the story is that the dollars become a more interesting currency again. I mean, this week, dollar strength came from a combination of geopolitical risks that helped support the dollar. And, you know, some sense that maybe the ground, was shifting with respect to the FOMC and monetary tightening. So, you know, as that develops, you know, we certainly can see the euro heading closer to 130, but, I'm not sure it's a one-week trade rather than a, say, three-month or six-month trade.
So at least in this respect, Mario Draghi is one happy central banker today.
Well, he might seem that way, but I think all central bankers and all policymakers exaggerate the impact of weaker currency on growth. The major impact of weaker currencies we've seen in Japan is not on the volume of exports, but on the profits that exporters make. And I suspect that, you know, even if the euro went down to 125 or 120, the surprise would be just how little growth, especially in the periphery, you get from that euro weakness. Because in developed economies, the exports just are not that sensitive to the exchange rate.
So from all you've said so far, it would appear that currencies are moving around for reasons other than conflict in the Middle East?
You know, I think that there's a sense, you know, yesterday, obviously, it made a difference, and the unfortunate, downing of the plane, made a difference in asset markets. You could see that concern that things were escalating beyond, what anyone had considered reasonable or likely. I think that today there's a sense that even though these remain issues, that they're going to be local issues, that they're not going to escalate. And which is why there's more of a positive sense, appetite for risk in the market today.
Right, exactly. And we're seeing it across asset markets, even in the Treasury market, though, that hasn't quite rebounded the same as equities. Currency volatility, though, is this sort of the beginning of a new phase of volatility? It's been out of the market for a long time. Could we see a little bit more now?
Well, that's actually a very interesting question, and I think that we may be beginning to emerge from this phase where nothing happens. It may not be as visible in currencies like the euro, which obviously everyone monitors on a daily basis. We've seen some excitement on the Canadian dollar with it going up and down this week. New Zealand dollar, some of the emerging currencies, just looking at the screen, Brazil is up by 1% today, South Africa by 1%. They're both down by 1% yesterday. I think that there's a sense that the sort of very placid period may be coming to an end. It's not coming to an abrupt end, but it does seem to be gradually a sense that there's that the basis of this very low volatility is eroding.
Stephen, given all that, then what's the next big trade?
You know, I think the long dollar trade, which is, you know, certainly not, has disappointed many over the last couple of months. I think with the sense that the even the Fed doves are beginning to talk about the U.S. economy recovering faster than expected and link with tightening monetary policy, I think that the when the Fed begins to tighten, and they're going to do it well in advance of the Bank of Japan and well in advance of the ECB, it becomes a much more dollar-positive story. In a report this week that the ECB sent out, one of the things that they emphasized is just how much bonds are issued in dollars by foreigners who then bring the money back home, presumably selling out of the dollars that they've issued in. And that's because interest rates have been so low in the U.S. When that stops, I think issuers are going to look to other currencies to be the funding currencies, and you know, the dollar will go up.
And so what currencies will be at the other side of that trade then? The yen, the euro?
I certainly think the yen and the euro. You know, there is this question, which is when the Fed starts tightening, and presumably they'll be doing this in the context of the U.S. economy recovering, what will drive equity markets? What will drive emerging markets? Is it going to be the pullback in liquidity, which has certainly, you know, helped them over the last couple of years, or will it be the greater confidence in the U.S. economy? As we saw last year when the Fed started talking about tapering, we could see EM come under pressure again. The growth picture is not very strong in much of EM, and the rally this year is because of the liquidity that's been in place. If that begins to get pulled back, that becomes vulnerable again as well.
And we're already seeing that churn in recent days, though that particular one could be short-lived, would you say? The Mexican peso, for example, Korean won, they're liquid currencies that are under a little bit of pressure because of what's happening in the Middle East.
Well, they're under pressure, but, you know, certainly today we're seeing, you know, high yielders doing very well. And there is a difference, I would say, between the risks that are faced by the high yielders, which tend to have big current account deficits and are very, very sensitive to funding conditions, and more diversified emerging countries like you know, Korea or Poland or Mexico, which tend to be low yielders, but they tend to be less sensitive to the liquidity conditions.
So you're saying that they won't be as affected medium to long term?
I think that the currencies that are really at risk are the high yielders, you know, liquidity dependent currencies. You know, of course, it depends if the Fed really threads the needle, and the pullback in liquidity and the normalization is so gradual that, you know, you feel no pain. They could come out unscathed, but that really is threading the needle, and the risk is more that when they begin to tighten, we begin to see you know, pressures on you know, big current account deficit countries that don't have terribly strong growth prospects.
So you're talking about the RAND, for example?
And, you know, basically as a group, you know, we're talking about, you know, emerging countries. Again, and you know, you can sort of see it in the picture of what we saw last year, which currencies were the fragile five. Those reasons haven't disappeared. So I think that they still face some risk.
All right. Let's turn to Britain now and Mark Carney. We see sterling topping 170. Actually, it's heading towards 171 right now. Weaker today by about a tenth of a percent, but then today's trade is slightly different from what we have been seeing. Does Britain move on interest rates this year?
We think they will. But increasingly, we're beginning to think that the, you know, what was a surprise a month or two ago, when Carney pulled back from his own dovishness at the Mansion House speech, and we're seeing that's pretty well priced into the markets now. We're looking to some political issues that the UK is facing. You know, obviously the Scottish referendum that's coming up in about 2 months. But then there's the UK election and the issues with UK participation in the European Union. We think that the good news is largely priced in. So we're not super negative sterling, against the dollar, but we do think it's toppish, and we think that once the U.S. really begins to shift its monetary policy, that we could see some downside to sterling against the dollar.
Did you, you know, listening to Janet Yellen's testimony this week and over the last few weeks, did you get any sense that, you know, they're moving closer to tightening earlier? Have you changed your mind on that?
You know, I was a little surprised. Coming in, I thought that she would essentially repeat the comments she made at the press conference, which were very, very dovish. But in particular, her comment that, you know, continued outperformance in the labor market would advance the day of tightening. And in addition, in the past, she'd been adamant that stronger demand would induce stronger labor force participation. And she labeled that as a hypothesis, as opposed to being as assertive on that issue as she has been in the past, which makes me think that the unemployment rate at 5.25%, which we're approaching rapidly, that what they consider to be the equilibrium unemployment rate, that they really take that as a target, and they won't be shifting that as they did, say, the 6.5% reference rate. So, in other words, the closer we get, the more likely they are to start talking about normalizing.
Mm. Stephen, we don't have much time left, and before you go, I want to get to the yen and the seeming shift in the tone from the Bank of Japan governor and his stance towards a stronger yen. Is this posturing, or is he really becoming more relaxed about a stronger yen?
You know, I find it hard to believe that he's relaxed about the stronger yen. I think one reality is that it hasn't done much for exports, and they may be worried that it's pushing up oil prices in yen terms more than it's benefiting exports. But my takeaway from his speech is that his comments this week is that the BOJ is beginning to acknowledge that the second quarter post-tax hike is emerging weaker than they thought. And that, I think, is very important because it opens the door to further policy moves. And I think we could see that coming before the end of the year.
As in examples?
Oh, as in expanding the scope of their QE program. That's about the only tool that they have left.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.